FSN Radio. It's all about what's next. Go to financialsurvivalnetwork.com and sign up for your free weekly newsletter. You'll also get three free reports. The Financial Survival Network. It's all about what's next.
Welcome, and you are listening to the Financial Survival Network. I'm Kerry Lutz. It's May 30th, 2018. So markets kind of heading sideways, gold, silver, more or less a little down, but sideways. Is that the trend? Well, before we get started, as always, make my day. Send me an email. It's the first thing I start my day off with is reading your emails and responding. The email address for reference is kl@kerrylutz.com. So looking at the markets, everything, it feels like it's got the feeling like we're waiting for somebody to push a button, like everything's on hold. Oil was up over 70. Now it's back under 70. Is it heading lower? Gold over 1300. Then it went back under into the 1290s. Now it looks like it's creeping back over 1300. The dollar has taken off yet again. What does it all mean? Well, Eric Haddock's with us. Eric, your site, insidetrack.com. That's insidetrack.com. It's great to have you back, and tell us what's going on.
Well, it's great to be back, Kerry. Thanks for having me back. You know, where to begin? Like you said, a lot of this is a broader sideways pattern in the markets. But I think that particularly in markets like precious metals and equity markets, that maybe on a small scale, it's kind of like the eye of the hurricane, where you had some pretty significant moves in the beginning of the year. And I've been expecting a second round of similar moves out towards the end of the year. And in between, you have that kind of calm between the storms, if you want to call them that. And I don't want to, you know, get hyperbolic with that. But just on a intermediate basis, I think that we could see moves kind of like we saw in January and February in a lot of these key markets, but not until the fourth quarter of this year.
Mm-hmm. So we're kind of in a holding pattern then, it sounds like, right?
Yes, but with plenty of intermediate trading opportunities to both sides or on both sides of the market. But for those that are looking for some sort of breakaway trend, I don't think you're going to see it in many of these markets, at least until later this year.
So it's basically building up to this then, right? It's
Yes, and you can even in the fundamental and geopolitical spectrum, you can kind of see that slowly festering or simmering. You know, I think one of the most significant things that I continue to emphasize is just the competition between the U.S. and China, and all of the ramifications that will have in the coming years. And you know, it doesn't necessarily mean that it ends in an all-out conflict. It could be a giant negotiating going on. You know, we know our president claims to be the ultimate deal maker and always starts out with hyperbolic rhetoric to start the game, and then slowly moves towards reality. You may see something like that going on between the U.S. and China, but even when you were mentioning earlier in your lead-in the movement in the dollar of late, it's interesting to me that I've started watching more the dollar yuan just to kind of keep it in perspective. And whereas the dollar has really surged against the euro the last 3 months, you look at its action versus the yuan, and all you've seen is a sideways pattern since the beginning of the year. And it's a type of pattern. This is after the yuan had rallied into January. And then this sideways pattern that looks more corrective before what you would expect to be another surge to the upside. And it's been holding some key levels of support during this pullback, even as the dollar is holding key levels of resistance when you're looking at it in that context. Mm-hmm. And so I think that gives you a different viewpoint of the dollar. The dollar index is, so weighted with European currencies that when the euro and Europe are racing to the bottom against the dollar, and they just happen to be accelerating faster, then the dollar suddenly looks strong, as it has for the last few months.
Right.
But then when you step back and look at it versus other instruments out there, you don't quite get that same bullish perception.
Mm-hmm. So everything is relative when it comes to the
exactly.
dollar. And so still though, the euro was giving trouble signs for the past few months. And then all of a sudden we've got Italy exploding onto the scene, or imploding onto the scene, if it were, right?
Right. And that's the, I've said this for several years, that we had earlier in the decade, our couple of challenges, even going back to Iceland in the latter part of last decade, and then Greece around 2014. But I've been saying my focus from a long-term multi-generational cycle basis has been on 2018 to 2021, when I thought we would see the next big challenge in Europe, and that it would ultimately lead to a restructuring of Europe, either the euro, the European Union. I don't know exactly which entity will see the biggest change, but I think that you are definitely going to see a different unity or union come out at the backside of that cycle in 2021 than the union that entered that cycle in 2018. And Italy's latest challenges and the conflict between they and Germany are just heightening that battle. And even looking back last year with the Catalonia independence vote, mm-hmm. and the some of that still simmering beneath the surface, but it is just this growing anti-euro sentiment, even going back to Brexit, obviously, and that's what you're seeing in Italy, is a government that's very anti-euro. So they put together their cabinet and it's immediately rejected because the finance minister is anti-euro, and leading to new elections, and it's just a getting more chaotic there, but it's reflecting the underlying tone that is steadily shifting towards at least a Eurosceptic mentality.
Right. So Eurosceptics, they seem to be gradually getting more control and more credibility, don't they?
Well, and especially when you have, kind of like you had in Greece a few years ago, you have nations that aren't as fiscally disciplined as others in the Union would like everyone to be. Mm. And all of a sudden, the other nations are left with the choice of either chipping in more to cover their debt, or watching everything implode that they've worked for. And it certainly is a two-sided thing there, that some of the austerity measures are almost unrealistic at times. And so you get that battle just keeps escalating. And, we know in our own country, once you've started down that road of debt, it just it escalates and it's like a snowball. And so then when someone tries to exert some fiscal discipline and say, no, this whole road, this debt laden road is just going to head to a implosion, they don't want to hear it. It's just, well, no, don't take away anything that we're entitled to. And
yeah, can't do that.
So if Euroscepticism is what comes out of that, then so be it.
Yeah, it's an amazing time there, because the fundamental flaws in the Euro and the European Union have really come to the surface. And rather than try to change anything, reform it, make the system better, all they're doing, really, just like the U.S., just kicking the can down the road, right?
Yeah, and you've got it's polarizing. You've got the two sides that just keep becoming more and more entrenched in their position, and even any reform, you know, would usually take the shape of someone having to pitch in and cover more debt somehow, and so then you have the citizens of those countries like Germany saying, wait a minute, you know, we've kicked in and we've kicked in and we've kicked in. And, you know, pretty soon you'll probably see a Eurosceptic mentality begin to take hold there more than it is.
Yeah, it's fascinating. So, hey, let's talk about oil for a bit. Oil was over $70 the barrel last week. It seems like it was a lifetime ago. Right now it's trading at $68 a barrel, but it looks like the trend is now reversing. What are you seeing in the oil picture?
Well, coming into this year, I had an overall sketch of what I thought we would see from an intermediate cycle basis. And so far, oil is holding pretty closely to that. So I would just reiterate that. And that was that we would see a 7-month advance from mid-2017 into early 2018. There's been this consistent 7-month cycle that had been developing in several of the energy markets. And then there was a sequence of buy signals triggered in July and August of last year that kind of confirmed that. And it's the part in what I call cycle progression, where you go from a cycle that's been governing successive lows, and you now go into this more accelerated advance, where that advance consumes the entire cycle. Instead of going from a low to low, you go just from a low to a high. And then you start to see that cycle impacting the highs. And the reason I mention that is just because when I was detailing this outlook in mid-2017 for an overall advance into January of 2018, the subsequent outlook was to then see an ensuing high in the third quarter of 2018, and that is still where I'm at. And one of the kind of corroborating factors that I was looking for is often a cycle like that will give you some clues around its midpoint if it sets an intervening high. And that midpoint was coming into play right in late May. And my recent updates last week and the week before were just pointing out that we've hit all the upside targets in unleaded gas, heating oil, and crude, and we should see a quick, sharp pullback into early June. And that appears to be what's taken hold the last week or so. But I do think that we could reach an intermediate bottom in the next week or so and kind of trade in a new plateau there, but ultimately setting higher highs out in August or so of this year. So I think that the short-term trend has certainly turned a bit negative, but the intermediate trend is still positive in my work, and unless some key indicators turn negative, which they can't even do that until middle of June, as long as that does not happen, I would be looking for energy markets to head back to new highs in the third quarter.
Really? So we could be getting over $70-$75 a barrel, huh?
Certainly, back up to and above that $73, which was the that was my primary upside target since mid-February, and crude came very close to that. It spiked up to about $72.80 in the front month. So I would certainly expect a spike above that. Now, sometimes you get successive cycle highs that are not much more than a double top. So a lot of the market action preceding that is what I use to clarify my expectations, particularly for price levels.
Right, right. I see. So precious metals, and you mentioned perhaps higher towards the end of the year.
Yeah, one of the things that I discuss in particularly in precious metals and also in overall equity markets the last 4 or 5 years is they really adhere to what I call the 90-10 rule of cycles. And very simply, it's expressing a market that's very prone to parabolic moves at the end of a cycle. And so often 80 or 90% of the price move of a particular trend takes place in the final 10 or 20% of an overall cycle in a market.
Mm-hmm.
And so again, like I said, it's just a expression of a sure. simple parabolic move, but you see it so frequently in precious metals and also in equity markets when they're selling off. That I've kind of come to expect that in my analysis the last couple of years. And leading into this year, there were three total time frames that I was focused on, but two of them were the of a higher magnitude. And the first one was in late January, early February. And the expectation there that was published back in November, December of last year was that gold and silver and the XAU index would see significant surges into late January, early February, but then set multi-month, possibly multi-quarter tops at that time. And that would kind of reinforce and project focus to similar cycles in November of this year. Some of them could stretch into early December, but in that time frame between mid-November, mid-December, where I think you'll see another accelerated move up leading into that time frame, which means that gold could be, you know, doing a lot of sideways action until a month or two beforehand, just like in its December-January surge. That all occurred within a 6 to 7 week period. Mm-hmm. And it wouldn't surprise me if you see something similar, maybe on a slightly higher magnitude. So, you know, maybe it's a 8 to 10 week advance. But until then, I think that you're going to see gold do a lot of sideways action. And the third time frame that I was looking at, which was more of an intervening cycle, is around mid-June when I thought we could see an interim peak. So it wouldn't surprise me to see metal see a bit of a rally into the middle of June. And if that happens, and if they set a top at that time, it would just strengthen the case for a more important rally and peak towards the end of this year. And in the meantime, you've got that, you know, the battle with the dollar, and haven't had as much of a battle with cryptocurrency this year as you saw last year, but a lot of factors that are pulling at gold from both sides. And, you know, even this the euro stuff we're talking about, it wouldn't surprise me if it was something really hitting the fan there that drives gold higher later in the year, because it's often when you see either the dollar or the euro going into a real accelerated decline that suddenly you get that flight to quality or safe haven move into gold.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it can happen really quick. I mean, look, just last week, it looked like the North Korea summit was going to be off, and boom, you had a spike in gold like that day. And then it kind of worked itself off over the next 3-4 days. But it was just interesting that everyone's on pins and needles. And when the slightest news item pops up, all of a sudden, you know, people rediscover gold very quickly.
Yeah, but it the struggle is that it never seems to be able to break through the key resistance levels. Mm-hmm. And I think that is going to remain the case for the rest of second quarter and probably most of the third quarter of this year.
Right. But it hasn't been able to break out, but its relative strength has been pretty okay, hasn't it?
Yeah, and that's one thing that I try to point out periodically to my readers is, you know, okay, if we're like when we were just down in the 1290s, I kind of put the two different perspectives there. One is that, yes, gold is in the bottom 10 to 20% of where it's been all year in 2018. Now back it up to 2017 or even 2016, and it's in the top 20% of its trading range for the last 3 years. So it certainly has held up there, which is, you know, from a long-term trend standpoint, is certainly a positive, and it's showing resilience. Just waiting for that setup and enough of an event or a news item to give it enough momentum to break through the previous highs and then accelerate. But there again, that's when I think you'll see that 90-10 rule where you break through, you surge, and a few days later, the whole move's over.
Yeah.
And although it could be a very violent one.
You blinked and you missed it.
Exactly.
Yeah. Yeah, well, that's these markets, right? They're really wound very tightly. They respond, react to different things, and the rally could be over before you even realized it started, which...
Right, and it's a function of technology and the way trading, funds trading, and computerized trading, it reacts a lot differently. It's not like... 25, 30 years ago when you waited for the next morning's Wall Street Journal to see what happened, and then you'd get another reaction to things. Now it's all instantaneous, and it gets overblown because of that. And so the pendulum swings exponentially faster than it ever used to.
Right. So what about the war cycles and all that? Trump, the overture by North Korea, it looks to be genuine, more so than it has in the past. It looks like the North Korean leader really is dealing quite differently with Trump than he dealt with any of Trump's predecessors. And that the idea of peace is always good for markets, isn't it?
Well, the stock market certainly likes it. It likes certainty more than anything. Whether the certainty is bad or good, it just doesn't like uncertainty. But, you know, even looking back the last year or so, North Korea is certainly an important geopolitical focus because of what they're doing. But in the grand scheme of things, they're still a small player. Now, obviously, if that small player gets nuclear capability and can shoot it wherever it wants, they suddenly,
yeah,
which is what they've been wanting, is that recognition as playing with the big boys. But, you know, I as much keep my focus on the Middle East and even Eastern Europe, Russia, that whole potential down the road, as my focus is much there as somewhere like North Korea. Now, of course, you also do have the South China Sea not far off regionally speaking, and that's something that continues to get your saber rattling even in the last week or two when the U.S. had a couple more warships go through the South China Sea, and China really reacting, at least with its rhetoric, more vehemently. And so even those type of things you're going to see continue to take maybe not center stage, but continue to build up those rumblings just beneath the surface. So, you know, I still think we do have war cycles that I'm focusing particularly on 2021, but it would be the months and maybe year leading into that when you'd probably get a better idea of where those war cycles are most applicable to. North Korea is, you know, if that does settle down and kind of be pushed on the back burner, that just gives the opportunity for other areas to take center stage. And the other thing is that you, even as things are looking positive with North Korea, you have to look at the bigger perspective of that. And that there is certainly a tug of war going on between the U.S. and China, that yes, China doesn't want to see a unified Korea if it's unified more from a Western slant. They don't want that right on their border. And so that's why, you know, even like you said, a couple of weeks ago when it looked like the summit was full on and then all of a sudden Kim Jong-un's talking a little bit differently. And then you find out there was some covert meetings with China, and there's a real struggle going on there. When you combine that with the South China Sea, all the tariff and potential trade wars, there's a lot of conflict and or competition that's really escalating there.
And going back to a couple of interviews ago, you predicted that something was going to happen in Saudi Arabia around the beginning to middle of the year. And sure enough, we had a major shakeup there. That was a pretty prescient call.
Well, and I think that is Saudi Arabia is going to continue to be one of the key factors in that overall cycle. It's even interesting where their, I wouldn't even say alliances, but that they've just become more Israel friendly, but that's also a enemy of my enemy is my friend type of thing where Iran is concerned. Mm-hmm. And so you continue to see that Saudi Arabia versus Iran competition playing out. And then you get Syria in the midst of that with some of the proxy wars going on. And even when there's calm or quiet there, that shouldn't deceive traders and onlookers, because that's something that's going to continue to escalate in fits and starts for probably many years to come.
No doubt. No, it's hard to find any stability in the Middle East, that's for sure. So I just find it fascinating. You called that, you said a major event. You couldn't specify what was going to happen, only that something was bound to happen. And there it was. It sure did happen.
Well, I think that whole shakeup going on in Saudi Arabia is just going to continue to play out, and that it could ultimately lead to more internal strife there. But that remains to be seen.
Yeah, just fascinating the way these cycles work. Hey, is there any market we missed that we should be looking at here, Eric?
I think we really covered them pretty well. One of the other things that I've been watching is bonds and the interest rate markets. with my broader outlook being a bear market in bonds from 2016 into late 2019. Mm-hmm. But one of the three key time frames within that 3+ year cycle was in the May-June 2018, when I thought we would see a pretty significant bottom take hold in bonds. And I'm really watching right now to see if it's already intact, which is a pretty good chance, or if we will see one more retest of the lows. But I think that you're going to see the overall interest rate mentality shift just a little bit in the third quarter and fourth quarter of this year, to where bonds will probably be trading sideways instead of down for the third quarter and fourth quarter of the year. And I think that has other ramifications when you're talking about the currency outlook, the equity outlook, and even precious metals, but that can be the topic for a future discussion.
All right. All right. Well, I think we've covered a broad swath of markets, all the ones for the most part that are important to you out there. And Eric, so looking at just going back to precious metals for 1 second, then we'll wrap up. For as far as price targets, you think we're going to break the 1400 mark and maybe even the 1500 mark there?
All along, since late 2015, early 2016, the key level that I've been watching for a multi-year rebound is around 14.25 to 14.50. Mm-hmm. And that is one of those levels that's both an upside target as well as a multi-year resistance zone. So to me, it's going to be more important how gold is looking as it gets closer to when I'm expecting cycle highs and what price is showing at that point. But up until now, I've stuck with that same level around, particularly around 14.25, 14.30 as my primary upside target. The only question, again, based on timing and based on pattern leading into that, is whether that's likely to be an ultimate objective or just a critical landmark along the way to higher prices.
Yeah, and it's interesting because precious metals, gold, only has to go up 10% to hit that price objective. That's not that much of a move. We've seen moves far more substantial than that take place over the past 15 years, 20 years by far.
Exactly. And the longer that you have this basing process, as long as it remains constructive, which it has, then gold actually begins to build more upside potential. And, you know, in many respects, the action since late 2015, so about 2.5 years, is kind of like from late 99 into 2001 and early 2002, where the metals just were basing and basing and basing, and then finally caught some upside momentum. Now, I think they're in a different structure now, so I'm not talking about a 10-year bull market to follow, but it's just a very comparable basing pattern and bottoming phase. So that's not a negative or a discouraging thing for gold bugs and gold bulls by any stretch of the imagination. So I look at it as a positive thing, but you need to keep it in perspective. And, you know, just because gold has a little 2 or 3 week bullish pattern doesn't mean it's going to the moon the following week. And, you know, often I encounter so much of that every little wiggle is supposed to be the next major run on gold, and things are just taken completely out of context or out of proportion.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we see that quite a bit, don't we? Well, that's only normal in this sector because it's got such emotional appeal and lots of other things. Anyway, it's, obviously, Eric, we want to check out your work. Go to InsideTrack, InsideTrack.com. And also, you have a couple of other sites we can go to, right?
Yeah, 40-year cycle. The number's 40, and then yearcycle.com has a lot of our archived reports and articles, but particularly those that pertain to this 40-year cycle that I've so frequently discussed. And even in my latest few newsletters, I've really emphasized how that cycle has applied so much to China, and that late 2018, early 2019 are linked to major events in China in late 1978, early 1979. But it's that 40-year cycle is basically what I'm talking about there, and that's the other website that I would direct your listeners to.
Okay, 40yearcycle.com. Hey, like we always urge you, write us any questions or comments. I thought the call, Eric, about Saudi Arabia, something major going on there that was at least 6 years ago, 6 months ago, maybe even longer, was really spot on. Hey, check us out on Twitter, at Kerry Lutz, and on Facebook, Financial Survival Network. Eric, we'll talk to you in a month or two. Be well.
All right. Thanks very much, Kerry. Take care.
FSN Radio. It's all about what's next. Go to financialsurvivalnetwork.com and sign up for your free weekly newsletter. You'll also get three free reports. The Financial Survival Network. It's all about what's next.